Welcome to Cut the Bull, an insightful podcast which addresses the news of the day and the cultural issues plaguing our society, bringing logic and context to these topics and discussing solutions too real for mainstream pundits. Now, here are your hosts, Charles Love and Wilfred Riley.
Hello and welcome to Cut the Bull. I am Charles Love alongside my co-host Wilfred Riley. Joining us again for intellectual commentary is Fatima Gilliam, author of Race Rules, What Your Black Friend Won't Tell You. And our guest this week is David Marcus, a freelance journalist for all kinds of publications and author of Charade and the interesting tweet that spawned the topic this week. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I hate to interrupt you right as you were, you know, getting a drag, but, you know.
I'm always getting a drag, man.
What else would I ask you, right? So I wanted to assemble this interesting panel to talk about a tweet you did. It's been a little while, but like you said, there's an article in Human Events that Adam Coleman wrote about it. And I guess I should start off by reading it because it got a lot of responses. Gen X knows. We did it on the race thing. Nobody gave a shit. It was 1998 and everyone was fine. We had it. It was done. Fixed. So I, like many people, commented on it. But I guess I should start here. Because I tried to scroll through and look and see the context, because I care about context and nuance, which of course you can't get on social media, but I didn't see that you were replying to anything. So I guess the most important question is, where did that come from?
It came from a lot, man. I mean, it kind of came from 30 years of dealing with this. This is something that I became aware of probably around 1991, 1992, when I was in school, and some of these ideas, you know, started to filter through some of the, you know, but I don't know. Peggy McIntosh writes Invisible Knapsack in what, 1989? So that's sort of the beginning of privilege theory, the beginning of CRT, the beginning of a new way of considering what racism is. So this is something I write about a lot. My central premise in regard to the situation that we face in regard to race in the country today is that there are two very different definitions of racism. One widely accepted by the left, one widely accepted by the right. And not only are they different, they're fundamentally contradictory in significant ways. And I sort of saw these contradictions begin in the 1990s. So the way I describe it is, the way most conservatives think of racism is it's intentional, right? It involves animosity, or it involves the idea that one race is superior to another race. There's something intentional about it. The other definition of racism that's widely embraced by the left today is that it doesn't have to do with intention. It's systemic. It's just sort of the air we breathe. It's the water that we swim in. Racism can be completely unintentional. And I struggle, I've always struggled with these two theories. And I do think that in the 1990s, when we were still sort of clinging to the racism has to be intentional model, we were doing a lot better. Polling backs me up, right? I mean, when you go back to polling and like how blacks, whites, everybody viewed race relations, we all viewed it as better than. And, you know, I think we all saw Coleman on the View yesterday talking about, you know, class versus race and like all of this stuff. He thinks that what happened was in 2013, we had cell phone cameras, and so people started overestimating how many black people were being killed by police. I don't fully dispute that, but I think that was a match, and the gasoline was already on the floor. And I think the gasoline was this new definition of racism.
Well, before I go to either one of them to comment on that, I don't think that I think you gave us a setup of why you think the way you do, and we're going to get into that. But I'm wondering where the tweet came from, because it didn't seem like you were replying to anything. So what was the catalyst for that? What were you, was it something that was happening outside of Twitter, or you just somebody was debating race? What made you post it?
Man, I think about this. I think about this stuff every day. I mean, I'm a columnist.
Right.
Like my job, you know, it's funny. Like I was teasing on X today that like this is hard for me because we record this at 9 o'clock at night and I'm usually in bed about 20 minutes from now because I'm a writer. I wake up very early in the morning, and I write.
Right.
And I write about what I think is important in the world. And this is something that I have always thought. You know, my mom represented the MOVE members in the 1980s in Philadelphia. Like, race relations have always been deeply, deeply important to me. And I think they're essential to America and America being what it needs to be and the example that it needs
Sorry.
to be in the world.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean that's so. I mean, I don't know where that's where it
Right.
came
You were just
from.
thinking it at the time and you posted it.
Yeah.
Well, I know Fatima is going to have some pushback on the tweet itself, but first, Will, what did you think about his view of the, dichotomy between the two types of views of race in the country today?
I mean, I agree. Fatima's probably not going to agree entirely. I
Don't
think
give
there's
away
this.
the lead.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that there's like a moral versus practical debate here, but I basically think morality is bullshit, so I'm gonna go with the practical side. Just objectively speaking, in the 1990s, race relations were seen as way better by everyone. And I mean, the way we know that is that you can just look, as David said it, Gallup, Pew, anything like this. It was very consistently like 70% of whites, 65% of blacks, which is what you'd predict. There's still some residual racism effect. Said race relations are good. They're getting better out data interracially, this kind of thing. The last time I looked at that data last year was 33% of both groups said race relations were good. So from that kind of local leadership perspective, like your goal when you do something, when you implement a new policy, has to be to make things better. If you think that your new policy is more moral or higher IQ or more interesting than the old policy, but it makes things dramatically worse, the new policy has failed. And I would agree that the new policy, actually, I take some notes when you guys talk, and I wrote down the two definitions of racism here. I would actually, as an academic, say that these are pretty easy to define. Like the old definition of racism is the definition we use in political science because we're looking at so many countries that you can't really get that theoretical. And that's dislike of outgroups. So the old definition of racism is to some extent intentional. You don't have to discriminate if you're a racist. Those things are different. But if I were to say, you know, I am Mexican American and I hate blacks and Irishmen, something I've actually heard people say word for word in Chicago on the South Side, I'm a racist. That's what racism meant to most people. Now, and I remember the last time David was on the show, we had this long like Chicago v. New York conversation about like pizza and something. Anyway, like moving on. So but
Don't
that's the
get him
old definition
started.
of racism. It's discrimination against the outgroup, prejudice against the outgroup. The new definition of racism, I actually think, is a lot weaker. Like in the beginning, it got into some interesting systemic issues. But where it is, the last time I read an essay from, for example, Kendi that he put out there for debate, is pretty much just that anything that produces a gap in performance between groups is racist. And the argument from Kendi or D'Angelo, and this is word for word, it's like page 12 of one of his books, is the only two explanations for any gap are racism subtle somewhere in the system or genetic inferiority. Like the man says this. So anything that produces any disparity is racist. Now, again, I personally think that's just objectively wrong. Like the modal average age for a black man in the USA is 27, white man is 58. So if you're going to look at either income on the left or crime rates on the right, you have to adjust for the fact that the black guy is 30 years younger than the white guy. So, but those are the two definitions. And I mean, I don't really think there's much more to say about that. Like every system produces disparities. I think in some cases, sexism, some of these are due to prejudice, but most of them just aren't. The 30-year-old, the 50-year-old guy makes more than the 20-year-old guy. So if you point at anything from the SAT exam to incarceration rates, men go to jail at 10 times the rate of women, who gets hired by leading law firms, disproportionately Jewish and Italian Americans, the second one of which kind of surprised me. But just down, 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 down the line, you'll find nothing but gaps. And you can say all of these are racist now. And there's a whole mini industry that's set up to do that as someone who works in the consulting space. So, yeah, I think that made things worse.
Fatima Gill.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's sort of like these two definitions, but what I'll say is in terms of Dave's tweet, mm-hmm. But to me, the underlying premise is that things were better.
Right.
And I don't believe that things were better. I mean, I think people weren't necessarily being as antagonistic, or it was less socially acceptable to bring your prejudices and your racism to the surface. But, you know, I lived through the 90s, and I don't think that it was less racist than what we're experiencing right now. I mean, the way that I look at
racism. Do you think it was less racist in the 50s?
No, not really.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing thing to say. Right? There were segregated water fountains. You think
we may have had segregation, but to me it's like, what is the underlying, you know, thread behind the way that people see the world?
So we made no progress. We made no racial progress.
We've made some progress, but that doesn't mean that we've gotten rid of people being racist, right? I think it's just taken a new sort of form. Right. So you can have somebody, I think the way that I think about racism, I do think it's a, you know, a piece of it does include whether it's intentional or not intentional. And that could be one way that it shows up. It also shows up in terms of who has more power and in society. And then it's also showing up in terms of like who just wants to not give up their privilege. Right. And if that privilege means that it's still going to support a pro-white society in terms of having more opportunity, having more access to capital, having more money and the like, they'll lean into that, even knowing that that is going to disproportionately and negatively impact people of color. And to me, that is still leaning into racism. And what I see happening in society right now with, you know, let's just call it the MAGA supporters and white nationalism on the rise and things like that. To me, it's just surfacing what people have thought for a long time anyway.
Well, okay. So,
it just wasn't acceptable. Wait, it's just being
hold
normal.
Hold on. I do want to establish that. So your position is that no progress was made.
I'm not saying no progress is made. You asked me, do I still? I mean, I think that we
no,
are.
No, I asked you was, do you think that the 1990s were less racist than the 1950s? And you said no.
I don't.
I mean, I think that's.
It's just
insane.
Showing up in a different form, right? So you can't, you know, because you could also say, all right, in 2024, you can't enslave people. Right, you're not
you couldn't
supposed
enslave
to lynch
people in 1950.
People.
You could make them.
But
drink
we have
in a different
people
water
that
fountain.
Would be perfectly that would be perfectly okay enslaving and lynching today.
I do want to say, like, both of you guys are actually expressing your points pretty well. But I do think, as just on the numbers wonk side, this is something you can measure. And you can say, yeah, sure, there's a 5 to 7% rate of lying or whatever. But I mean, every year we ask people these basic questions, right? Like, would you consider an interracial love marriage? We've been done this since the 40s. And the rate is gone from originally among both whites and blacks. Hispanics were always pretty tolerant, which is weird. But among both whites and blacks, the rate's gone from like 8% to, I think, whites, Caucasians were at 94% last I looked. So, I mean, I do think when you say,
see that as a benchmark. I don't see that as the benchmark, like whether or not, you know, because people are going to have their own impression about
what
is
the
is
benchmark.
Let me finish the one line, though. Like, this is what I'm saying, though. There has to be a definition. So this, and by the way, when I write papers, I'll usually say the definition, let's kind of define your terms. Like, the definition I'm using of racism is doesn't, or dislikes people of other races. And people normally read through it and say, okay, makes sense, Riley. And I'll usually get a comment from the left-wing reviewer, like, try to expand, and then you'll move on. But, I mean, if you're going with the standard of dislikes other races, and you are someone who would consider marrying for love with a white person if you're black, I think it's pretty fair to say you're not racist. And so by that standard, we have a lot fewer racists today than we did in 1950. And the percentage of races between 1990 and 2024 on a lot of things, would you work with someone of a different race, serve in the army with someone of a different race? That's been really stable. So 1950, the races for both whites and blacks, I think it's probably worse for whites at this time, up here, goes down to the 90s, then kind of stabilizes.
We're starting from the same place because we are starting with a completely different definition.
See, so that's what I was going to say.
That was the point.
To me, the definition is not whether or not you hate somebody from a different race, whether or not you will be friends with them, work with them, you know, marry them, sleep with them. To me, that's not necessarily the benchmark. It's part of the calculus, but it's not the only calculus. So to me, it's also, some of it is into whether or not you're perfectly okay opportunity hoarding and oppressing other people, right? So for your own benefit.
I'm sorry, opportunity warning? What does that mean?
Hoarding.
Hoarding.
Opportunity hoarding.
Yeah, but, opportunity hoarding.
How are white people opportunity hoarding today?
I'm asking.
Charles,
I think that's a question.
Yeah, so what does that mean? How are white people opportunity hoarding today?
A broad range of ways, you know, to create.
Is that happening in universities? Are white people denying black people the opportunity to work in universities today, hoarding those opportunities?
Well, I mean, I think this broad scale attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, including trying to upend affirmative action.
No, I'm not talking. I'm not talking about the attack against it. I'm saying the status quo right now.
Pushing it.
Right. Is this a problem? Is it a problem right now at universities? Are universities right now denying black and brown people opportunities?
It will become increasingly easy for them to do that without.
Well, no. Are they doing it right now?
Well, here's, but
not probably not consciously, but
probably not.
But here's,
I'm saying not necessarily consciously, but the way that the system is set up, that it will inherently have discrimination.
So later on, it's going to happen right now.
Hold on.
It's going to happen right now.
Well, wait a minute. Who's being discriminated against in the universities right now?
He's a buyer, isn't he?
I'm sorry, but here's a better question, right?
If they're hoarding the power, wouldn't they not be promoting DEI programs because that would be antithetical to that?
Yeah.
Trying not to support the DEI program.
The right politically is trying not to do it, but the people who run the universities are pushing it. They are trying to do it.
They do want it, but now their hands are tied.
No. I'm asking a different question. I agree with you. So the right, bad, they're trying to stop it. But the fact that the universities were okay with it and leading with that, they're run by whites, so aren't they in that sense willing to break down some of that power that you're speaking of? Like, they're white.
I think there are plenty of white people that are trying to create opportunities and access for people of color.
Okay, that's
there are
what
plenty
I was
of white
yes.
people.
Would you agree that the status quo right now is very inviting? You wouldn't. So you think that universities need to do more to bring.
They do, because you can just look at the numbers.
Universities are not diverse enough.
Breakdown what Fatima just said of the two definitions. So, I mean, you just said you can look at the numbers, right? I think, again, these are common positions in our society. So just quickly, I think this really sums up the two of them. The argument really is, I think, when you talk to someone who's highly intelligent and on the left, just like any system where you have a disparity is racist. So I'm an academic, I'm not really an executive anymore, I'm a tenured professor, but working in higher education, I can say we're definitely not trying to keep out minorities. No, like in Kentucky State, it's kind of funny.
You had an HBCU, bro.
No, but like, no, that's the, we actually are considering affirmative action for whites. I mean, if you look at, anyway, but like, are one of these
they
programs
already have
for,
it.
Hey, can
well,
I get a
I mean,
job?
You know, we got, you know, a certain number of kids from the mountains, whatever. All our students are great. I'm not going to, anyway. The point though, is that the basic argument that the universities are racist. I talked about this in an event called the Louisville Forum recently. And my opponent basically said, well, there are fewer black people in higher education than you would expect from the black percentage of the population. So we can consider this a racist system. And my response was, well, the reason for that is that the average black SAT score, like we're catching up on the test, we're still behind, is 100 points behind the average white score, 120 or whatever. And he said, well, we can consider that a racist system. And it just went on and on. Like, we were having fun. Like, you can drink at these events. But I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, if you're objectively saying, is a black guy with the same test score from the same social class disadvantaged relative to a white guy applying to KSU or UK or anywhere else, Yale? I don't think anyone could argue that. The question is just, is there something out there in the system that's disadvantaging that middle-class black dude, making him get a 1080 on the SAT? I don't think so.
And I want to get back to the tweet, but I got to ask let me ask one question, then I'll go to you, Dave, then we get back to the tweet. So, Fatima, my other question is about those percentages. I know if you say even within the group, there's still differences, but a lot of it, when you mentioned where David was trying to get follow up from the power hoarding and the people in power, isn't that what, like we talked about this before? I always go back to where it's happening. It's kind of like, if you have power, you know, it's a natural thing for you to do, to want to hold on to it. And then if whites are the majority of the population, you know, isn't that, can a percentage of that be not anti-black racism or anything else, just as you call it, you describe it, power hoarding. So isn't it just that they're the majority of the population in the country?
No, because the percentage is disproportionate. The percentage is disproportionate. Like, to me, what should be reflected in a university, a company, you know, an institution, is what is the population, right? So if you have an overrepresentation and an underrepresentation, to me, that's a red flag.
So would you be okay at 13%?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that, because that reflects the population.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If blacks were 13% of population and they hit that benchmark in corporate America,
that to me looks like success. But if you look at like some of my alma maters, where the numbers have gotten progressively worse over years, I can't remember what the current number is for Wellesley, Harvard, and Columbia, but they're just not great.
Oh, that's right, because you went to all
three. 6%. You know, when I went to Wellesley, it was a higher percentage of blacks, and now it's gone down.
Right. Do we need less Asians? Maybe we should just have less Asians.
Well, that actually,
I mean, just
so,
yeah, again, like,
I mean,
if we just,
I could
we
say
should,
I went, so when I
we
worked
should,
at,
because, you know, I grew up, you know, I didn't grow up, but I did live in an immigrant community in Bay Ridge, with a Chinese population, and my son went to school with Chinese immigrants. Boy, they're a problem, right? They're a big fucking problem.
Well, wait, how are they a problem?
Well,
define
because,
what the
because,
problem is.
Because, you know, because suddenly Stuyvesant is 70% Asian.
Correct.
That's a big
Brooklyn
problem, right?
And Bronx Science,
why is Stuyvesant 70% Asian, right? Same reason he used to be 70% Jewish. And the same anti-Semitic tropes will be used against the Asians, right? Because, oh, it's a problem. These people are taking it over. No, man. They're just doing it. I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to do.
This actually is the real problem. So, I don't think there are more than two definitions here, actually. Like, the Kindi definition is what everyone I've talked to on the left about this means. It's the idea that any system that produces disparity is prejudice. And the solution is proportional representation regardless of performance. And I think David's question is so interesting, because it's not about white people. It's not about black people. It's about people from Taiwan and India. Like, if we're going to proportionally represent, Asians would only be 7% of Harvard.
It'd be a smaller percentage, yes.
Well, they'd be 7.1%. Like, would you be comfortable with that?
You're asking me?
Yeah. Any of you, but yeah, you first.
I would be comfortable with that. I mean, I wanted to reflect the population, but, you know, I think the bigger issue would also be that maybe the school, you know, if they want to go to Stuyvesant, if they want to go to Brooklyn Tech, Bronx Science, some of these other, you know, schools where you have to apply for the high schools in New York City, I think the bigger issue is that all the other schools need to be improved. Right? Because I think there needs to be a system where people have the same, I don't know what the solution is for New York City to equalize the numbers, to have more equitable access to these schools, but clearly there's something wrong with what's playing out right now. So I don't know if it means that
what's wrong? Bronx Science has produced what, like 40 Nobel Prize
No, scientists. I think he's saying
nothing
wrong with the
what's
fact.
I'm talking about the demographics
the
right
fact
now.
That blacks don't get into the school at a higher proportion. But I agree with
blacks,
that.
Blacks, whites, Latinos. I mean, I don't. It's not that I don't have anything against Asians. What I the challenge that I have is when it's so disproportionate with the population as a whole.
Well, what
I'm
if
not
they just,
saying I don't know what the
just
solution
do better?
Is for me.
But what if they're just right, doing better?
But Davis, she's right about
but it
one
could
thing.
Also be how are you measuring it?
But she's
we're measuring it by test scores. I mean, what do you mean how are we measuring?
And I think that should be one aspect of it, or
oh
it could
my
potentially
God. So
be
what? No
that
more
it's,
tests?
I'm not saying no more tests, and I'm not I haven't analyzed New York system well enough to be able to come up with what the solution is, but it could be that, you know, whatever top percentage from your high school, or sorry, from your junior high has access to a high school. So that you don't have
are you kidding? Are you kidding
numbers.
Me? These
I
kids,
said, I don't,
these
I haven't
Asian
looked at
kids, these Asian kids, their parents are running laundromats. This is not. No, stop it. You're not talking
I'm
about
not
Connecticut rich
I'm not
white
talking,
people
I
who
know
have had
these,
a legacy of. No,
I know these are
no,
a lot of
no,
working class
no,
kids.
Stop it. No, stop it. You are talking about immigrants who are working
I get
hard.
That.
And you're
I'm
denying,
them that
opportunities
hard.
Because you don't like the color of their skin.
It's
That's
not
what's
about the
going
color
on.
Of their skin.
That no, I'm sorry, that is what you're doing. You don't like the color of their skin.
I don't
and
have
so
a problem
you say,
with the color of their
fuck
skin.
Fuck them. That's what you're doing.
No,
I
think
don't
you
think
need
that's
to
true.
not put words
I think
in my
the lefty
mouth.
position here would be fuck them to any group that was doing well, no matter what the color of their skin was. So
but,
that's why the Asian cases were so powerful when it comes to affirmative action. Like, the argument for affirmative action was always like, we've been holding black people down in the USA, to some extent true. You know, let's give them a hand up for 25 years. The issue now is that there are a lot more Latinos, most of whom are Caucasian, 18% of the country, than there are black people. And the most successful group is people from Asia. So do you continue this system of proportional representation? And I don't see it as feasible. Like, if we just did, by the way, whites would hate this too. But if we just did
they
open
do. They
admissions
hate,
to Harvard.
A lot of them don't like how it's played out in California. But I want to backtrack because I really don't like making assumptions or putting words in my mouth, Dave. I never said anything that I think that it's a complete mischaracterization to say that I have an issue with Asian people, which I don't.
I
what I'm talking
suggest
about
that.
No, I think when you were like fired up 2 seconds ago, that's pretty much what you implied.
No, I don't think you have any issue with Asian people. I think that your analysis has an
what
issue
am I
with Asian people.
Wait, say the last part again. I didn't hear it.
Your analysis has an issue with Asian people.
I just want it to be reflective of the population.
Why?
So well, that everyone
that's,
has
because
that
she believes the break
that's
between
fair,
the two
Jay.
Sides.
I mean, you're
I
not going to change
that's
the
true.
On that one. She thinks that's
the thing is, we have some core fundamental differences, right? So the difference is how we're going to see the issue, what our benchmark is, how we're defining these things.
Right.
David and I are coming from two completely different places, so we're not going to meet anywhere.
But even when we try, here's my issue. Even when we try to, I told you before, I'll have to send you the clip because you were like, if that's true, I'm with you. But you were like, I need to see the receipts. But
yeah,
so
that's
my
true.
Point. But I got to bring this up because this is perfect to that. You did say something very important that I think we can all attest to. Why are there not enough blacks or whomever getting into these schools where they test? What they should do is fix the schools, right? So
they
should
the
create an
schools
academic opportunity where kids at schools in majority black and brown neighborhoods have enough academic opportunity to be able to pass the test. If they work hard, the opportunity should be there. I said that in a board meeting and they called me racist. They said, I don't care about black kids.
And I still don't
how
know
dare
what
I want to
said
fix
for
their
me
school.
To fully get on your side with that one.
All right, fine. I'm going to send you the clip. That is exactly what happened. They wanted to change. Listen to what they wanted to do, Dave. They wanted to get rid of the tests to get into these schools.
I know.
Because there weren't enough blacks in there, right? So
no, I know.
We should just
it,
admit
and
more
it assumes,
blacks.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
And I'm like,
and
no. Help the kids in the elementary school and the middle school so they can pass the test and still keep the test. Because the point is for the schools, if they're selective enrollment schools for the brightest of the city, to still make it for the brightest of the cities, you want to see more black faces there.
Let me,
fine,
but
they should be able to pass the test.
There's a thing I really wanted to bring up, Charles. And yes, God bless what you're saying. You know, I live in West Virginia now, and where I'm sitting right now, I'm in my little townhouse that I rent, you know, because I don't make a lot of money, right? But right across from me is a cemetery, It's the black cemetery, right? Across town where the bigger houses are, there's the white cemetery in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. But in the black cemetery here, I've gotten a tour from, you know, because we love our history here, like we did when I was a kid in Philadelphia. In West Virginia, people love the history. It, interned in this cemetery are some of the people who started Stoner College, one of the first HBCUs, right? Very successful black people who had been slaves, one of whom founded a hotel that was the most successful hotel in America in the 1870s. You never hear his story because that's not a story we like, right? No, there were no successful black people in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s. No, it was horrible. Everybody was being... No, there were incredible success stories. We never hear them. We never get taught them. Even the leftists don't want to teach this to us. But in fact, it's true. And it frustrates me enormously because this is the country where everybody had these kinds of opportunities. And we aren't learning these stories. And I'm the first person to say that we aren't, but division is not the answer, man. We need more of these stories, not less of these stories.
I think people want to tell these stories. I think there are a lot of people who want to regulate what's going to be taught in school so that you can't tell these stories. And those
No, I think you don't want this story to be told.
Why would you think I wouldn't want to hear about the guy that was successful and that had the hotel? Why wouldn't I?
Because I think it undermines your narrative. Because I think
no, it doesn't undermine my narrative.
Yeah, because I think it undermines your notion that like there was no opportunity for black people. I think, you know, we don't learn enough about the Harlem Renaissance, right?
I think you're making a whole bunch of assumptions that are extremely way off base.
But you also said something about people who don't want to people to teach it. You say that people want.
Yeah, I'm talking about the crazy people on the right that want to control the books that you read and not teach.
What do you think we don't want to teach?
But who's trying to keep you from learning about these stories?
People that want to ban books. I mean, he's talking about saying that the left doesn't want these stories told.
Yeah, I don't
these
know.
These are the
what,
kinds
about
of stories that I listen
it,
to. I
want
to hear.
Wait a minute.
Of my own people.
Ron DeSantis got in a lot of trouble for suggesting that there were black people who learned things while they were slaves that were able to lead them. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
That is.
How do you think this former
So slavery was supposed to be a job training program.
No, it absolutely was not intended to be that, but it did turn out to be that.
But that's not what the curriculum says.
That is just crazy thinking.
No, it's not crazy.
But that's not what the curriculum in Florida says. It does not say it was a job training program.
No, of course it doesn't.
It's the implication of it. What is the implication is to try to create a narrative around slavery to try to present a story that it wasn't as bad
as
it
was.
That's
not true. That is absolutely
not true. That is a lie.
And you have to look at the messenger. Because Ron DeSantis is a white nationalist.
No, absolutely not.
But that's not true.
He is a white nationalist.
What you're missing is...
No, he's not. But one point here that actually is kind of important is that a lot of these things just are objectively true.
I don't know which person I'm listening
to. If you're saying that captured fighters of all races learned things under slavery, that's just true. I mean, that's one of the major things that every book on slavery talks about. Not to like shout about this of all things, but I mean... I think that a lot of people are reluctant to teach things that are accurate, that interfere with their bullshit. I don't really see this as a left or right trait. You see it a lot with religious people. But I mean,
To me, the question is, why is that more important?
I see this more.
No, Please
I
let
see
me finish
this
my
more
point.
with the left than with the right, actually, where the people that object to, like, the Ron DeSantis thing became a national hysteria. And I do want to hear your response to it. But saying, like, captured fighting men learned skills when they were enslaved, that's something every history book says. So I don't see the right doing this to the same extent. Like, I looked through those books that were supposedly banned on the right. We had Moms for Liberty on here, went back and forth with them for a while. And, like, the majority of them were books about gay teen sex. Like, this book is blue. What was the other one? Gender queer. I don't really see an effort on the right to claim that slavery didn't happen. And I would like to hear a response to that, but that's not something I see.
I'm not saying that their whole broad scale saying slavery didn't happen. But what I am talking about is, you know, what is the focus of what you're going to prop up? Because slavery was brutal. It was human trafficking, sex trafficking, child trafficking, a whole bunch of terrible things. Of course, it built the economy for this country so that we could become the wealthiest nation in the world. But to me, if the focus wants to be, well, why don't we focus on what are the positive sides of it? To me, that is trying to teach people that it wasn't as abhorrent as it actually was, which
nobody has ever suggested there was a positive side. It's objectively absurd.
When you guys built the American economy, that's objectively not true. Like, there are a bunch of studies of this. I think the figure they came up with for the British Commonwealth was 3%. For us, it was 9%. The South was the poorest region of the country. So again, everyone has a fantasy narrative they want to teach. And I see this as more prevalent on the left than the right. Generally, last thing, one of the things that you have to teach about labor, and you say this was human trafficking, unprecedented in history. Slavery was the default state of what happened when you lost a war everywhere in the world until the West ended it. That should be the start of every lesson on slavery. The third human
can I try to bring this back into the sort of like modern situation? Because one of the things that I'm that I've always thought about in regard to where we've wound up on the race question is the late 80s. And it's why I situate the late 90s as the point at which I think things reach their apex, right? So 1985, The Cosby Show is the most popular show on television. The Huxtable family is the prototypical American family. It is a black family with a doctor and a lawyer. They live in Brooklyn. They live in a very multicultural Brooklyn. We see their neighbors. Everyone sort of gets along. The idea is aspirational, right? We hear a lot about education. We hear a lot about HBCUs, this kind of thing. This is 1985, The Cosby Show. 4 years later, Spike Lee drops Do the Right Thing, which I think is one of the most, which I think is maybe a top 10 American film of all time. It's an amazing film. It really is. It takes place in basically the same Brooklyn neighborhood. I mean, maybe The Cosby Show is Brooklyn Heights. I think Do the Right Thing is probably Fort Greene, right? We're nearby. There's this question of gentrification, right? All of a sudden, this same Brooklyn neighborhood is not the Cosby Show's utopia of you know, racial getting along. It's a cauldron of racial hatred. And that amazing scene of just close-ups of everyone's face, like, saying racial slurs. Here's what I find fascinating about that gap and what happened in those 5 years. What is the incident that sets off the violence in Do the Right Thing? It's not a lynching. It's not a police killing, although it ends in a police killing. What sets off the action of Do the Right Thing is that Sal's Pizza Place doesn't have any black people on its wall. There's only pictures of Italians. There's only Frank Sinatra. There's only Dean Martin. You know, now I think, why not put up Sammy Davis Jr. to fix the whole fucking problem, right? But there's no pictures of the representation. It's a microaggression. It's a problem. Spike Lee accurately in that moment understood, hey, this is going to set off bigger problems. That moment to me it's why I situate the 90s where I situate the 90s, man. That gap between The Cosby Show and Do the Right Thing is a hell of a thing to me. How did it happen?
It's the same society. It's the same society.
Is one the ego and one the id? I mean, were they both true?
I think that the version that you see in Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing is where American society is and was.
So you think that behind that when we're done doing this, right, when we're done with this, all of us are going to just have a close up of our face where I call you a racial slur and Charles calls me a racial slur. And that's where we really exist, is that we're pretending to have this very nice conversation, but actually I'm think of you as a racial slur.
I don't know if you think of me as a racial slur, but I mean, I think.
Do you think most Americans do?
I think many of Americans are deeply racist. Yes, I do.
So you think most Americans would look at you and think of a racial slur?
I don't think they would necessarily think
most a racial slur, some what 20%, 30%.
I can't.
They look at you and they think a racist thing. What percentage of Americans do you think, just when they meet you on the street, their immediate reaction is,
it depends. There are plenty of people who may
What percentage do you think?
There are plenty of people who are going to look at me.
What percentage do you think?
I told you I don't have a percentage for you, but what I said is,
do you think it's 10?
I think
it's all of us?
Yes,
I do. All of us look at you. Now look at, listen.
I do. I mean, look at you want me to, I think all white people are racist. I think all white people
right?
are racist.
So I think all I white people. David, so, she answered you. She said, I think all white
people. I think all white people are racist.
The question.
Okay.
But this, all right. This to
but
me.
But I'm not saying that they're going to look at me and you like think the N word when they see me.
This to me is like the Christian concept of sin, and no offense, a lot of similar nonsense across the great philosophies of the world. It's the idea that there's this boogeyman out there that's totally unseeable, that comes from the past, that's constantly pursuing you. Like, no, everyone's not a racist. Like, we ask people, like, would you have a loving spouse of another race? 95% of people say yes. What you're saying is, well, that doesn't mean anything. That's not what I mean by a racist. I know how they are inside. And, like, I've enjoyed our conversations. I don't mean to mock this that much, but I don't think that's real. I think Americans today are taking these tiny, minor issues and creating this worldview that justifies actual political moves.
I think part of the problem, and what I would like people to do, is expand how they think of racism, right? So I think most people are going to think racism is the Klansman, right? The person who's going to like burn the cross in your front yard. And they think of it in these sort of extreme views, right? And that it's never, you know, it's not in their daily life. It's not in their home. It's not in their neighborhood. It's not in their community. It's always somewhere over there. But that's not the way that it actually plays out, you know. So yes, I do believe that.
How does it play out?
I believe that all white people are racist, but that doesn't mean that they're. It's malicious.
All white people are racist.
I do.
You look white to me.
I know that I look white to you. I know that I look white.
She's a spy. She's on the inside.
So are you totally racist?
Not a spy on the inside.
I'm teasing. But I mean, so like, I think it's important. Like, Fatima's definition here, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but almost certainly means like a racist is anyone who supports any system that could theoretically produce any discrepancy between any groups. And that's where you get to kind of like the magic talk.
Well, that's,
like,
I mean,
what
that's,
is racism?
That,
it's
maybe
all
in
of
some
society.
Part, no, but
it's Asian kids taking tests and going to school.
Fatima, can I ask you a question?
Do you think that?
So, okay, I understand your position is that all white people are racist. Mm-hmm. I think I understand that position. Are you calling racism a moral failing or an irrational failing?
I think it depends on the person. It could be both. I mean, because I don't think that everyone who's moving through life is trying to intentionally harm or be malicious or try to have bad thoughts or views of other people that don't look like them, right? But to me, it's, I think it's impossible to live through American society and not breathe in the racism that's around us, right? So it doesn't have to be that it's these extreme forms. It could be, you know, the casual everyday racism, right? The microaggressions. It could be the, somebody not consciously,
Going back to my theory that the 1990s were a sort of like breaking point, right? You say the microaggression, right? And this is where I think that where the definition of racism starts to change, right? From it doesn't have to be intentional. This is all just systemic, right? You say
it's not someone who dislikes the out-group. It's anyone who supports any system that produces any result. Sorry to keep jumping in with that.
Because you're saying every white person is racist. So even the white people who, even Robin DiAngelo, even the white people who accept everything that you're saying.
Yes.
They're also
BLM.
So there is no okay.
Yeah. Some of them are worse.
Can I ask you this?
Record,
hold
David.
On, Charles. Let me ask just one more question, Charles, and then I promise I'll let you go. Do you believe that there is ever a possibility that white people could not be racist, or is this just gonna be true forever?
I think in our lifetime it will
I said forever.
No, I don't think it has to be forever.
Okay. Yeah.
But what I will say this
it too, doesn't have to be forever. How does
no,
all
it doesn't
whites
have to be
have
forever?
Interracial
what I also
children,
think is like
they
people,
can be forgiven.
I think that people are on a spectrum, right? So like you have like really extreme forms of racism and white supremacy, which will be like the Unite the Right rally people. And then you have people who are like trying to do the work, trying to be better, trying
what
to
is
create
the work?
Like diversity.
Can you define the work?
No, it doesn't have to be like that. Well, but
for 30 years people have been telling me to do the work and I'd be happy to do it. I don't know what it is. What is the work? Can you explain to me what the work is?
Some of the work would be trying to educate yourself.
Okay.
To better
by
engage
how?
With people.
Buying race rules.
Charles,
do you know how I can do the work?
I think if you got my book, it would help you. I really do. You probably won't agree with it all, but I think it will help you.
Charles, what's the work?
I think the work would be, to steel man would be to understand the systems that cause the problems that are racist. Am I doing well so far, Fatima?
And doing something about
and
it.
Then,
so
yeah, but first they need to understand what it is and how they play a part in it, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
actively try to lessen your part in it.
Correct.
God, I did it!
Hell yeah, Charles, left-wing co-host. I've always wanted one. Got two right now. Boom. My own definition, and I enjoyed Fatima's book, but I mean, my own sincere definition would be the work is basically just standard religious conversion. It means accepting a philosophy that you don't actually need to explain anything in the world that my regression models seem to explain pretty well, but that argues that the root cause of everything is systemic abuse lurked within systems. There are 10 major systems or whatever. I think Fatima's breakdown is actually pretty solid. Dismantle them. So the work is learning to believe this thing that's a new moral system replacing the old one people have abandoned.
Okay,
that's
I,
what
need
it
to,
actually
I need to leave
means.
You for just a moment, Will, because I got to get this in because that's what we brought up. We kind of went off the rails. But to my Gen Xers here, sorry, Will, old folks, saying, Fatima, that I guess I have to ask, start off by, you didn't know Dave, you had never heard of him. So did you take the tweet literally? Like, did you think it meant that no one was racist after 1998?
I
saw some,
when I saw
some
the
of the
tweet,
comments which just didn't make sense to me. That they,
when I saw the tweet, I thought, okay, Dave just is not, he's walking around with blinders and not seeing society.
Yeah, but you didn't think he meant that in 2004, no racist walked the earth. You didn't take it literally, right? You're like, kind of. He wrote
it. I don't know. I mean,
he was
I'm keeping it honest, right? I didn't know who Dave was before. I'm like, okay, well, He's affiliated with Fox.
I was just
so
gonna say
I
that
really
was funny.
Don't know.
Side note, she
don't
replied.
Know,
I sent
there's
her
a
the
lot
invite.
of delusional
She changed
people
the
on
subject.
Fox.
David, I sent her the invite. She changed the subject to David Fox News. I'm like, you know, he writes for other people. It's like
Oh, but
Fox News guy.
I've written for the New York Times, man. I write for everybody. If you can pay my fee, I write for you.
But here's the thing.
Fair
This is
enough.
my point. Do you believe, Fatima? I know it's hard because you kind of said it changed. It's got. He asked if it's gotten better since the 50s. Give him some grace, right? You got to give him an argument. Do you think if I told you what he was saying was, not to speak for him, he's here, but the way I took it when I read it, because I've said similar things. We got the law in 64, right? But the and then other laws, subsequent laws. But the law doesn't change, like you even said earlier,
The
Fatima.
law
It
is
doesn't
changing
change.
though.
It doesn't change what people believe and think. So you could have all the laws you want saying don't treat black people bad, but how you feel is how you feel. You admit it yourself, though, that as time went on, it became less socially acceptable. So you can still be a racist. I don't think David was saying
Except
there were no
now it's
racists.
becoming totally acceptable,
Right.
and you have people trying to use the
But
law
let me finish. Let me finish.
against.
So
All right,
what
I'll
he's
shut up.
saying is that you had this stuff like he just beautifully talked about from the Huxtables to do the right thing. But by, I say really, the early, he could say 98. By the end of the 90s, early 2000s, you got a point to a point that it was not only not socially acceptable, but you would be shunned in society. The difference, I think, between people that think like this is where Dave and I agree and where you would disagree. I'm not even saying that you're wrong about how many races are here, whatever the case. That's not my issue. Because I don't get involved into what people think because I can't control what people think. So even if I give you that 90% of all whites are racist for whatever reasons, if there are laws in place to stop them from doing certain things, right? And when they get caught and they go to court, they don't get a separate system like they did before. Well, we went from they would never get arrested to we had a kangaroo court where no one was tried because a lot of people would bring up, that's the same year James Byrd died. And I asked them, okay, tell me what happened to the people who did it. They're like, well, what do you mean, right? Two got the death penalty and one got 35 years. That wouldn't have happened 50, 60, 70 years before that. So that's the change we're talking about. Fixing it means you did all you legally can do and you changed the minds of people. And that's about, I personally, this is where you and I
but from
mostly
a legal
disagree.
perspective,
Last line. This is where you and I mostly disagree. I don't even disagree with the left on that fact that people are still racist. We just disagree on how many people are. The difference is many of you, I won't say you because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but many of the people on the left want to fix them. I'm like, you can't fix human nature, so I don't really care. Let a racist be racist. I'd rather them be openly racist so I know it, and we deal with their actions, not what they think. I don't really care about that. Well, I think too many
people
are spending too much time on what they believe, trying to fix them and make them do the work. Just let them be who they are, and if they break the law, convict them.
It's not always going to be a law-breaking situation, but I do think people can improve, and you shouldn't just like throw up your hands and let it be. If you throw up your hands and let it be, then we're going to have a significantly more reversion. And if we're looking at what's happening to the legal system right now, it's completely trying to dismantle the infrastructure that tries to promote a more equitable society, right? So if you're looking, I mean, I you know, as an attorney, I definitely struggle with the Supreme Court because I've pretty much lost all respect for the Supreme Court at this point. But, you know,
all
with
of them
the,
are just the ones on the right because they've been doing some 9-0 and some 8-1. So are they wrong too?
Sometimes there might be, you know, but for the most part, they're still stuck with Roberts' leadership, and they're going to continue to have these 6-3 decisions. But it's not just what's going to happen all the way at the Supreme Court. It's the you know, what's happening at the at court of appeals level, the district court level, but whatever. My point is that, you know, if part of your argument is that we have this legal system in place that's going to promote equality, right? That legal system is being completely blown up right now. So not only do I think we are a racist society, I think the progress that has been made, because I do think, yes, there has been some progress. I just don't think, to your question, Dave, before like the 1950s versus now, I don't think people's minds have completely evolved as far as they could or should be. And deep down, there's still a whole bunch of that racism underneath it. But there have been legal advancements. There have been policies and certain requirements that institutions and municipalities and the like have to uphold. But now that's being undermined.
Let me say one thing. I'm sure, David,
this,
one thing I'll let you get in. Someone called, someone replied to his tweet, and they were like, I don't know if I did it. I want to know what Charles thinks. So they called me, and I said, this is what I think it means, and this is what I'm going to tell a quick story just like they did. So I'm a Gen Xer. I graduated in 1989, right? And I remember being in high school, being chased out of certain neighborhoods by racists for saying, you can't have your black ass in my neighborhood, right? By the time he posted the time frame he's talking about in his tweet, I was working at a casino and living with a friend of mine who lived in that very same town, right? And so now I'm retracing these same streets and going to these restaurants and these bars where I was chased out, you know, in my senior year and junior year in high school, and being embraced in that same community. Obviously, still a majority white community. It might be two black people in the town, but all the animosity in that town was gone. Is that the whole country? No. But this is the shift he's talking about. He saw it in Philadelphia. I saw it in the suburbs of Gary, Indiana.
I'm still trying to figure out how Dave's mom could, you know, represent the MOVE people, and then Dave has the views that he has now.
His view is a normative it's a normative view. He's not saying that people aren't racist.
I have like being raised by hippies to make you want a haircut and a job, actually. Like, my mom was a 60s advocate, which is why I kept living in all these hood neighborhoods where she taught school. And I consistently noticed that a lot of shit didn't work that would be really easy to fix. And the stories that people used to explain this were just lies and nonsense. And that developed me into the person that I am today. And I assume there are many such cases. Although, from all I've heard, Dave's mom was a great person. I don't know what the backstory there is.
I have enormous respect for John Africa and the MOVE movement. What they were trying to do in the late 70s, honestly, John Africa was trying to move to Virginia. I mean, there was a plan in place to do it. Look, was it a problem that the MOVE members were in West Philadelphia and row houses, like, raising goats? And there were a lot of black people who had problems with that. You know, was the first incident with the police that my mom was involved in a criminal defense attorney a problem? Yeah, like, I'm not convinced that the MOVE members killed Officer Ramp. I think that the MOVE 9 have had reasonable claims to innocence. You know, my mom represented a guy named, you know, John Brinkley, who is convicted of killing an Eggman. His brother admitted that he was the one who did it. I think John Brinkley, I don't know, like, the last time I checked, he was still, I think he probably died in jail, right? My mom knew he didn't do it. She banged her head against the wall as a criminal defense attorney for years. I get it. Like I understand, like, how the system was built against this. And I still spend my time trying to fight against that. If I see that kind of thing, man, I'll write about it at Fox News. Of course I will. I don't know, man. Like, I do. I feel like we had it. I feel like we were there. And maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't think we were there because I was living through.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we weren't.
I was
maybe
living through those same 90s.
The polls suggest that we were, but maybe I'm wrong.
What the polls suggest is that people's perception of what was happening was better. But I don't think underneath it all, it was actually better.
This is an important point about how we should respond to the minor, tiny inconveniences of life. Like, fantastic. If 70% of the country is really happy because massive racial conflict is over, almost everyone's willing to marry across group lines, people are living together, that's a good place to be. Because
why not?
No, but that's what I'm saying. There are utopias. There's only this world, and that's a fine place to be in this world. What happened was that upper class radicals decided that they could do a number of things, including say witty stuff and get tenure, by problematizing, if I'm quoting Hooks correctly, this normal, happy life we were living in, and pretending that their normal, happy, upper middle class lives were hellish and almost unsurvivable. It's something you see every day as an academic, and I think it had a real impact on the country. So yeah. Kendi was so impressed,
right? All of them. Nicole Hannah-Jones, so impressed. Oh my goodness.
Nicole Hannah-Jones is one of the most pampered, she makes a half a million dollars
and has written one column in the past 10 years. Don't talk about my feet. My God.
No, but I mean, this whole thing.
How is she not? Okay, so she's so pampered that she got treated the way that she was by UNC.
Yeah, she makes half $1 million to write one fucking column. She is not qualified
to be a tenured professor at the University of North Carolina. No one, Jewish male with those credentials.
She does nothing.
Offered that job. And this is one of the things that you see.
No white man is going to get that fucking job. It's ridiculous.
So like, we're all
it's not a job.
There are two serious points here. One, I genuinely do feel, and this is demographically accurate. And by the way, most of them are white. This is an anti-black thing. But if you look at the demographics of people that are in like feminist studies in the academy, it's a really, really narrow, we'd say, slice of the electorate. Like virtually all upper middle class, lower upper class, postal, even my own Chicago would be one of the smaller cities on the list. We got 10 million people. There are like 10 universities that produce these people. So that's one thing. Like they're almost every citation is to one of 9 guys like Foucault, Hooks, so on. The second thing, and this is just true. Like I could send any of you a bunch of crap documenting this. So that's one point. The second point is that I really do think that this claim by these people that they are oppressed is absurd and has actual social consequences. Like, I'm sure everyone experiences some racism, some sexism, but the idea that Nicole Hannah-Jones, who's a New York Times columnist, has a difficult life relative to anyone, black or white, that I know in Appalachia is objectively absurd.
I don't think we should be tokenizing. No, that's how we get to the point where it's like, out, oh,
you can give
because
to
we have Obama and Oprah Winfrey that therefore
God, like
9%
You want 12%?
There's no tokenizing. Ibram Kendi, and I don't dislike the guy in person, would not have his job or current reputation if he weren't a witty left-wing black guy. It's just a fact. I mean, they're probably soldiers that if they weren't ready, right-wing white dudes wouldn't have their position. But Kendi's the exact reverse. The man makes $40,000 to talk for 27 minutes.
Interestingly, he started out as a trailing spouse at a university, but yeah.
But he also got a 10-20 on the SAT. It wasn't his, and again, I have no personal hate for dude, but it wasn't his brilliance, his publication of 9 books in the shadows that pulled him out of the two-body problem. Like, we need to be able to recognize this. Like, when people ask, why would you ever say you think someone is unqualified in, for example, a DEI hiring role? Because I know what the SAT scores are in the country.
But they're not that high for anyone.
I don't think the SAT score is the end-all, be-all. But by your guys' benchmark, then if we're going to take, the data point N equals 1, then, if we're going to, look at my own experience, then you would say, oh, okay, because I went to Wellesley, Harvard, and Columbia, and whatever, that I haven't experienced anything racially offensive, oppressive.
I'm absolutely sure as a fellow citizen who's a minority, you've experienced racism. I'm also sure that anyone who's gone to Harvard, Wellesley, and Columbia is not in the top 50% of people in the country in terms of everyday life.
Barely a third of people even go to college to begin with.
That's correct. So when we talk about a bunch of people that have master's degrees, argue with a bunch of people that have PhDs about who's suffering more.
Just because I went to those schools, doesn't mean that I haven't experienced and other people like me have not experienced racial discrimination along the way and didn't have barriers.
I didn't say this. You've never.
No, I'm just saying.
Let me ask you a simple question. Has anyone ever shot at you?
David.
Well, I mean,
you are asking white people to deal with their whiteness, and I promise you, you are not going to like the fucking results. It is not going to be good. It is the wrong question.
It is the wrong thing to do.
I am watching people who I respect on the right turn into
cult followers.
Racist nutcases?
No, you're doing it to them. I promise you that you are. And it is a problem for me because I am telling them, listen, ignore these fucking people.
Yeah, bro,
they're
idiots. I find feminists annoying, but I'm not going to start hating women. Like, I think this is one of those kind of up in the air debates. Like, at some level.
No, this is, no, listen. No, like, this, I'm telling you, Wilford, this, no.
It's
this
not
is
a legitimate being a racist to say my opponents are racist.
White supremacists are being created today. White supremacists are being created today.
Or
and
they're just revealing their true selves.
They are not.
Well,
they
are
being created because people like you are forcing them to
how
to
am
be
I forcing?
Forcing you to
and
be
it's
a
goddamn fucking problem.
How am I forcing people?
Because
I want
to you're
shine a light?
Them to, because you're saying race is everything. Look at race. Race is the deal. No, it's not.
Mad, Marcus. There's a real point there in what we just heard, which is that if you encourage people, so like I'll just give a very brief.
What are they supposed to fucking do?
I'll give a very brief like screenshot of my own emotions. If someone came up to me and told me you and your ethnic group have all these problems, I think that you're bad people. Although I dislike you, I'm going to continue telling you what a bad person you are. Response would be fuck you, get out of here. I don't know you. I don't care about you. My goal is getting money.
Of course.
Green, like no, but so that is and like I have. Actually, I don't. I was going to say something. I have all the respect in the world for very moral and empathic people, but I don't. And I think we give them far too much credit. I think they need to get back in the sheepfold and shut the fuck up. They don't. None of us here really fall into this category. But so I think that, one, for most people who are aggressive and successful, if you come up to them and tell them how bad they are, they will respond aggressively. This is true. And this is what I think David is saying. The flip of this, though, I will say, like, even when I said only 6 to 10% of people are racist, like, those boys have been out there for a while. And when you get onto Twitter, one of the things that happened is that the censorship restrictions were lifted. I can actually tell you how this was coded. I'm sure all you guys know as well. But I mean, so when you see like IO, for example, the race science account, interesting guy in person, but just every day posting like, and let me tell you about the black white IQ gap in the state of Georgia. Now here's Tennessee. So like, I don't think that guy was made into something of a bigot by CRT. I think that you have a combination situation where you have these annoying people on one side and that people are getting irritated in the middle. And you also have predators on the other side that are exploiting that now. That's the real dynamic. So if you're a normal taxpayer in the center, center right, center left, whatever, you have to come up with what's your strategy to get rid of all this crap. It's like the boot kicking the swastika and the hammer and sickle, which is, you know.
Hey, David, last thing
I
about
think there are a bunch of people that are being overly triggered. They don't want to share the power. I think it's inappropriate to say that
what
it's
power
the left.
Do I have?
Driving.
I'm sorry. You have enormous degrees. I have no college degree.
Yeah, I mean,
I have a high school diploma and I'm a columnist. What power do I have over you?
You still have more societal power than I do.
Why? Oh,
and
come
even
on.
Even still.
No,
you
know, societal.
Because I write for the fucking Daily Mail. Come on.
Somebody
why?
With a high school degree. Has more, a white person with a high school degree still has more wealth.
Yeah,
because
I worked real hard. And
no,
and was
more
a
wealth than like
a
person, you know, like a black
story.
Person that has degrees. I'm just talking about the data that's out there about racial
wealth.
David,
in the form of a home. I actually pulled up that stat while we were talking. But that's a little different from power. Like in terms of societal collective power, like if I wanted to fire a white janitor at my college, I could. Like the idea that, no, I wouldn't, by the way, because I'm not a racist, but the idea that everyone works together in these broad collectives, like me and Charles are on the black male team, and you have to rank people in terms of power, brother, that's right, show everybody. But I mean, like the idea that everyone's fighting in this fashion, and some cultural appropriation by the Proud Boys, by the way, who took Uhuru, but that's a different topic. Anyway, the idea that everyone's fighting in this fashion, so as a black man, I have more power than an Asian woman, but less than a white man. That's not how life works. Like if I'm hiring an Asian woman, a white man, a black guy, I have more power than all of them.
I spent a decade working as a mover in New York. There was one test. Anyone who came on the job, right? There were new people. They were black. They were Hispanic. They were Asian. I worked with people of everybody of every fucking color, right? There was one test. You get to the back, you get to the lip of the truck, right? There's three boxes there. There's a heavy one, there's a medium one, there's a light one. You don't always have to take the heavy one, right? You can take the medium one sometimes, but if you always take the light box, we know it. Didn't matter what color you were, and we said, no, we're not going to work with this guy anymore. He's not taking the heavy box.
Yeah, They're going to leave everyone else with the heavier load.
Yeah, no, and nobody cared.
I'm going to be a terrible team
and nobody
member.
Cared what color you were. The only question was, are you willing to take the heavy box? And that's how we worked, and that's how I think America works.
Dave,
now you don't.
Dave, what was the response? What did you see as the response to your tweet? What was the majority of it? You know, I saw a lot, some stuff, but I've been thinking you saw more.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't look. I'm a writer, right? I write what I write. Mm-hmm. I don't spend a lot of time explaining it afterwards.
Right.
Because because my job is to put it all in what I say.
Right. You got other things to say.
Well, yeah, but it's not even that. It's like, no, I write what I say. I write what I think is true. And then after that, like, if for me
you
to engage
it.
In, whoa, but what about this? What about that? I don't do that because, well, sometimes I do, but in moments of weakness, I do. But in
but
moments,
I don't mean
yeah,
to.
Because look, I take my job very seriously. When I hit send, right, to my editor, I have to stand behind what I write 100%. And I think that the reason that nobody trusts the news media today is that there's no accountability. I've written, I think, by my count, about 2,500 columns over the last 10 years in my career as a columnist. I've never had to make a significant correction because I'm careful. Because I don't make mistakes. You're not allowed. Right? My position is, when the New York Times ran that bullshit story about Israel bombing the hospital and 500 people were dead, and the New York Times ran the story and it turned out to be complete bullshit. My position is, the people who had a byline on that never work again. That's it. It's a death penalty. You're done. You're done. Now, they'll say, oh, but we had sources. Who were your sources? Hamas. No, you're done. You're done. Because you bought those sources? Okay, your sources were wrong. That's you.
Right.
Your excuses are your own. You're done. You never work again. That's my position as a journalist.
Gotcha.
Does that apply to the problematic article that the New York Times put out about the rapes?
Which one?
Rapes in Israel.
What? Were there no rapes?
No,
you think Hamas is not raping Israeli women?
Of course
women?
We're
I'm sorry. Let me ask you. Is Hamas raping Israeli women today?
Yeah, I have no... I mean...
Yes. Yes, they are.
And Israelis are raping Palestinians.
No, who are Israelis raping? Stop
they're
it.
They're both raping.
Who are Israelis raping?
She said they're both raping.
They're both raping.
Who are Israelis raping?
That's what men do.
Who are Israelis raping?
Whoa.
I want you to tell me right now who Israelis are raping.
All white people are racist. All men are rapists.
I'm not saying all men are. I'm not saying.
Who are Israelis raping? We know the UN has said Hamas is raping Israeli women. You just said Israelis are raping.
They're both raping. It just comes. That's what happens.
I'm sorry. No, I want this on tape. Prove it. Who are Israelis raping?
I mean.
I mean, what? Who? You have evidence of
what? I don't
want
to go down a swirly
you have no evidence.
Conversation.
Stop it. Admit,
no. We're not going to agree on
right
this.
Now. No. No.
You're very fired up, Dave.
Stop it right now. Stop it.
I'm just
you
talking.
No
I'm
going to
bring it back.
All right, Charles, are you going to step in here?
I'm
Israelis
bringing,
are
you
raping
talked
people?
About
what,
they're both raping
gonna,
people. That's just what happens.
You
have
this,
war going
you
on.
You really want video of you claiming Israelis are raping people to go? I'm not
saying
gonna
this
do
is
it.
What happens.
I'm not going to go on Twitter
so
and
you
call
say,
you out.
Hold on.
For
you want to say
Israelis
you want to say that there have been
people.
Zero.
But I should.
No, no, no.
I should do that. I should no. call you out for doing that. My
no,
book,
I'm saying you
want to
say that.
I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm out. I'm out. Unfucking believable. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
You're the only one losing your cool.
Okay. That's frankly a little unexpected, but...
Yes.
Okay, well, both sides are raping.
Well, I guess obviously we have to end. Will has to go and he left, but I do want to say this thing. I want to
okay,
add
that last part I'm very surprised happened, but okay. Right. I mean,
yeah. Like, people get passionate.
I mean, you're gonna have a conflict. People, you know, this is what happens in war. People use sexual violence as part of their tool. Whether or not it's a systemic approach to sexual violence is a separate issue. But to say that with Israel there would be zero rapes.
But you're
just like the moment that the hostages got taken. I was
here's
like,
the issue though. You brought it up.
You just know what's gonna happen.
But listen,
it's just what happens.
Listen,
but
you
the
brought
difference
it up.
Is that Hamas committed probably 900 rapes against the UN estimates. There's no allegations like that against Israel. And I mean, in all honesty, if I were an Israeli general following the October 7th attacks, my goal would be to slaughter everyone in Hamas.
No,
like,
but what I was talking
the city
about,
to the ground.
What I was talking about was that article that came out that has gotten a lot of attention in the New York Times that has been a lot of it has been debunked. So I was just posing the question where he was saying if somebody put out an article in the New York Times that talked about erroneous information about a hospital being bombed and then they should never be allowed to, they lose their credibility and can't work for the Times again. I'm just posing the counter question is, and does that apply on the other side with the article that was written about the rapes that has all kinds of problems that lots of people have written about, where they've said that the sources are questionable, right? And then they've gone in and they've asked people. And then the woman who was like quasi-journalist that was involved in that article has questionable ties. So that's all that I was posing.
Right. Well, the one thing I
that if they both have credibility issues, then if somebody wrote an article that has been debunked, even though I think the guy on it, maybe he won a Pulitzer Prize, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't be working for the Times either.
Right.
No one should still be working for the Times. Fire them all. Clear the masthead.
What I want to
mean, if they're putting out false information.
Yeah. What I want to say.
I got to go in a second, guys.
Yeah, what I want to say in closing, if somebody else would let me talk, you could be gone.
No.
Man, everybody's like chatting.
We lost the other guy.
Right. Well, that's one down. But yeah, I just wanted to say
it's crazy
that my concern with these, and I like having these conversations because I get an idea of what my concern isn't about right or wrong. It's solving the problem. And you say do the work. My concern is that, you know, it's like a basketball game. It's like a full court press. You're not allowing the other team, you know, a chance. I don't know how we improve race relations if it seems like everything that we try to do, you know, is not enough progress, not in the right way, it's going back in the other direction.
I mean, no, but that's why I said before that not only do I think people are on a spectrum, like if I didn't think that people couldn't improve, then I wouldn't have written the book that I wrote.
No,
written.
Of course, but I
right?
don't know.
Because the whole premise of the book is to try to give people advice, tools, and a pathway to do better.
Right.
So if I thought they were a complete lost cause, I wouldn't waste my time at all with those.
Well,
folks.
I think we need more conversations yet because I don't think we've gotten to that point yet. We've gotten to getting to an understanding of what the two different sides disagree and what they agree on, but not much of what you do going forward to fix it. And that's what we kind of need. But I do want to leave with this. I implore you to go look it up. That when you talked about the Florida Black history thing, whatever you think about DeSantis, it's not about him. It's about that Black history.
You're not going to agree.
It's about the Black history curriculum itself. The media took that one line out of a 210.
Why are you defending that fool?
Can I finish? I'm not defending him. I'm defending truth. The Black history curriculum does not spin Black history in a positive way. It does not. It says all. It is probably the most robust Black history curriculum in the country. And I wrote a piece about it. The exact same line. See, you won't listen. Be fair. The exact
same line. I am listening to you. I just don't agree
line,
with the words
okay,
that you're saying.
The exact same line and argument made in that curriculum was made by the group that denounced it, saying that it was wrong. But in their own curriculum, it says the same thing. I'd be happy to send it to you, Edward, and we can discuss it then.
That's a great ending note.
Fatima, thank you. Thank you, Dave, thank you. Wherever you are, and thank you, Will. God bless the US of A, land of the free and a home of the brave. God get all of the praise. I got a country to save, cause I'm Patriot J and I'm